Ladies and gentlemen, so far at Limerick, I've experienced a wonderful sense of togetherness. I've seen some amazing acts of selfless volunteering. I've witnessed children and youth being engaged in phenomenal programs. I've seen a deep thirst for knowledge and a desire to connect earnestly with our Jewish roots. Here at Limerick, you cannot escape the fact that it's great to be Jewish, and I'm delighted to be a part of it. Every week we have the Parashat HaShavuot. It's an opportunity to engage in Torah learning, and through the Parashah, the weekly portion, we are always able to derive incredible inspiration for our personal lives, for our people, and for society. So today, I'm going to be giving you a Parsha Shir, and the sheets that have been handed out contain within them one chapter, Parashat, chapter 2 of the Book of Shmot. Exodus is what we read last Shabbat, which just happens to be the portion of this week. And so together with you, I'd like to experience some learning, which hopefully will open up for us an opportunity to appreciate the timeless value and relevance of our Torah. The text is a well-known one. It's all about the origins of Moses, his birth, the way in which he grew up, and eventually was ready to be called upon by God to lead his people out of Egypt. That's going to be in the passage immediately after our section. But in this particular section, the Torah will describe to us the qualities that are necessary for a great leader of the people of Israel. So let's start at the beginning. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. And the man of the house of Levi went, and he took to wife the daughter of Levi. Vatai vayisha vatelet Levi. And the woman conceived, and she gave birth to a son, Vatera, Vatitohu, Vatitzaleu, Shlosha Yerachim. But she saw that he was a good child, and so she hid him for 3 months. Of course, the context was that Pharaoh had declared, Kol Habein Hayilat Hayorat HaShlifuhu, every boy that will be born will be cast into the waters of the Nile. But there's something fascinating about this opening passage. This is the Book of Shmot, which means names. But here, purposefully, the Torah omits any reference to names. Elsewhere, you are told, A took to wife B, and together they had a child C. And look what we're talking about here. It's the birth of probably the greatest leader our people ever has had or will ever have. One of the greatest persons who has ever existed on the face of the earth. I recall on the day in which Prince George was born, I got up early that morning and I was watching Fox News to see how the Americans were describing the birth of our prince. And this is how they put it. Imagine that today a child is born, and we know for certain that one day he will become president of the United States of America. Can you imagine the commotion and the interest in that particular birth? Well, they said, today a child has been born in London, and we know for certain one day he will become king. No wonder that the British people are so enamored with this event, and that there is such enormous media interest. Well, here the Torah has an opportunity to describe a great birth, if not one of the greatest of births, and purposefully names on this out. A man who came from the tribe of Levi happened to take to wife a woman who was also from Levi. She conceived, and she gave birth to a son. And so the commentary, Kehilat Yaakov, observes as follows. From here you can learn that every single person has it within his or her capacity to become the type of Moses. Yichus is nonsense. Family stock doesn't mean much. It's who you are that counts. And so while we know that the parents were Amram and Yochevet, the message here is that you can utilize your own potential to become yourself in the best possible way. You can, for example, be a black person born and brought up in apartheid South Africa in Kuno in the Eastern Cape. And within your capacity will be the ability and potential one day against the odds to become the greatest leader of the entire world, regardless of where you come from. And this is such an amazing message. The great leaders of the Jewish people don't need to have miraculous conceptions. They have it within their own through their own abilities, coming from a normal man and a normal woman as a normal individual to grow up to become truly great. Now a word about the actual parents. So who were Moses' parents? Later on we find Amram and Yocheved. And we don't know much about them. In fact, largely the only thing we do know about them is their names. And their names reveal not so much about them, but about their parents in the choice of names that was given to them. Amram, what an incredible name. It means a nation that is elevated, a nation of dignity, born at a time of oppression, at a time when our people was trampled upon and considered to be subhuman, not deserving regular recognition from other human beings. The child was born and his parents said, you will be called Amram because despite the context in which you will grow up and live, we are determined to be a people of dignity. Your heaven means God of honor. At a time when people would question the very existence of God, how he could do this to his own people, you will be a symbol of the fact that God is indeed a God of honor. Imo'anochim etzarah, he is continuously with his people. And when we as individuals endure tragedy and troubles and challenges in our lives, God is a God of honor, and one day he will bless us. If not in this world, then in the next. And so too with our people, the Pum Tzara Agra, it says in the Pirkei Avot, according to the suffering, comes the reward, even though as a nation we might endure so much persecution, ultimately redemption will arrive. So given those names, you can imagine the type of family that this was. And as a result, Amram and Yocheved were blessed with three children. Can you imagine this? Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe. Aaron to become the high priest. Miriam, the greatest woman of the Jewish people at that time, a prophetess. And Moses, our great leader. What incredible parents they were. But where did they get it from? They got it from their parents. I heard this idea from Rabbi Riskin, chief rabbi of Efrat. It was my nephew's Sheva Bracha in Efrat. And at the dinner, he wanted to pay tribute to the grandparents of the bride and the groom. And so he used this idea to show how, you know, sometimes you have people and you wonder, where did they get their ability? Where did they get their talent? Where did they get their compassion and nobility from? And often it comes through osmosis from previous generations. Because once the tone is set within a family, the rest, as they all say, could just be history. So we learn, therefore, that when we endure trouble, God is with us as we experience it. And in this regard, I'd like to share with you a Kabbalistic thought. It's something from which I continuously derive a lot of comfort and encouragement. The Kabbalah tells a story which I will modernize for you. A man passed away. He went up to heaven. And when he arrived in heaven, he didn't know what to do, and he saw a signpost. And an arrow said, Beit Din Shel Mala, the heavenly superior court. So he realized, okay, God is going to judge me now for my time on earth. So he started to walk along the road towards a place he didn't know exactly where he was going to. And then suddenly he heard a sound from behind him. It was the sound of a vehicle. He turned around and there was a truck coming towards him. And he hailed the truck down. Truck stopped. And he said to the driver, where are you going to? The driver said, I'm going to your trial. He said, oh. And he said, and what do you have inside the truck? He said, here I have bags of all of your avails, all of your transgressions. So the fellow says, oh my gosh. He said, can you give me a lift?
And her father said, I'm sorry, you can see, even here on the passenger street, there are so many bags and it's just so slippery. And off he went. Oh, in vain. The guy started to schwitz, and then he hears, as he's walking along, the sound of another vehicle. He turns around, and there's a car coming towards him. Hails him down, the car stops. He says to the driver, where are you going? The driver says, to your child. He says, and what are those bags there on the back seat? He says, those are bags of your mixers, all of your good deeds. He says, can I have a lift? He says, sure. You can relax. Now in the front seat of the car, oi, babe, oi, my life, what have I done to myself? And he's brought along, and then he sees a huge structure in front of him. What a magnificent building. The car parks in the parking lot. He gets out, and he can already see the driver of the truck is schlepping all these bags from the truck and he's bringing them into the building. He comes inside the building and there, right in the middle of the building, he sees a huge pair of weighing scales. And there is the Ribono Shel Olam, God Almighty himself, sitting to judge. And bag after bag after bag is placed on the pan on one side. And this truck driver is really busy. And that's it. He puts his last bag. And then God motions to the car driver, says, now it's your turn. He has to have a stepladder to get all the way up to the pan. And he brings one bag and another bag. He's only got a few. And he's putting the last bag up. The fellow's going through hell. And then suddenly he hears a sound. It sounds as if there's another vehicle. He runs outside into the parking lot. And he sees that there's another truck. And he goes up to the driver and he says, what have you got in your truck? And the driver says, here I've got bags of your sorrows. All your sorrow. And so he starts to bring the bags into the courtroom. And God motions and he says, put those bags on the side of the mixers of all the good deeds. Bag after bag after bag. And it's starting to move down. And another bag and it's starting. He's got a few more bags and it's coming. And it's going to be very, very close. And there's one more bag to go. And it's absolutely... And then it's equal. And the man cries out to the Almighty and he says, God, why didn't you give me more sorrows? So the message is, God is with us, is our sorrow. Don't ever think that he's not there. And if not in this world, in the next, all will be sorted out for us. Because he is Yahweh, the God of honor. And so too it happened with our people in Egypt. God delivered. And we were redeemed. In the Negev prayer, on Yom Kippurim, just before the fast is over, we say, Yehi ratzon milfanecha, shomea kol bichyot, shetasim dimoteinu benodecha liyot meitim, your will, Almighty God, the one who hears the sound of cries, that you will place our tears in a container. And in time to come, you will be able to take out each and every one of those tears to remember our suffering, because you are indeed a God of honor, and you are always with us. In terms of contrast, we can contrast the birth of Moses with the leadership style of Korah. Because with regard to Moses, we're told, Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, Vayikach efat Levi, Vayikach and he took. And the portion of Korah starts, Vayikach Korah le Yithar ben Kahat de Levi, and Korah the son of Yithar, who was the son of Kahat, the son of Levi. Korah was a man who was mindful of his family origins, of what we call Yichus, and because of that, his great ego determined that he and not Moses and Aaron should be the leader of the people. Whereas with Moses, as we've read, it didn't really matter where he came from. What was important for him was who he was and what he was going to achieve. And therefore, he was anav mikol adam, more modest, more humble than any other person on the face of the earth. And that is why he became such a remarkable leader. Ego stands in the way of great leadership. And that's why Moses reached the highest possible level. Now we've read something interesting. Moses was born, and it says, his mother saw him, ki toku, that he was good.
That's not the best description to give for a little baby. For a baby, you say, he's sweet, cute, lovely. And of course, you comment on who he or she looks like. And you'll be able to imagine all kinds of comparisons with people. Whether the comparisons exist or not, okay, it's a baby. But you say a baby's good, so you'll think, all right, so he sleeps well. That's why we say he's good. But if he sleeps well, it means he's got good parents who are at ease and there's tranquility in the home. So what does it mean? He was good. He was good. The Gemara in Masechet Sotah, Daf 12b says, he tofu means there was an aura of spirituality around this child. There was a sense of goodness there in the room. Other commentators say, she saw him and he was good, which means he was whole. He was born circumcised. And there is a tradition that the Messiah will one day come for our people and he will have been born circumcised. But there is a further tradition that this relates to Moses' name. We're going to learn a few verses on how Pharaoh's daughter gave him his name, Moses. But at birth, what name was given to him? He told. The name was Tubia. So if you know anybody who's called Tubia, or Tobias, or Toby, that's Moses' original name. The goodness of God. She saw that he was good. Tubia. She saw in him the goodness of God. What incredible parents. After all, they knew if it would be a boy, he would be killed instantly. Can you imagine the prayers that they offered during those 9 months leading up to his birth? Please God, may this be a girl. And then a boy was produced, filled with dread as to what was going to happen to him. They said, Tofu, God is good. What an amazing family. Moses was born on the 7th of Adar. He also died on the 7th of Adar, on his 120th birthday. That's why we say that you live for 120, to be just like Moses. So she hid him for 3 months. Exactly 3 months after the 7th of Adar is the 7th of Sivan. And what day is that? Shavuot. Exactly. That was the day on which the Torah would be given at Mount Sinai. So therefore, already that day when Moses was placed in the basket on the waters of the Nile, on that very day in future times, the Torah would be given at Mount Sinai. And also, I don't know if you're aware of the fact that in Israel every year there is a national day of memorial for soldiers killed in battle whose burial places are not known. That day is the 7th of Adar. It's the Yahrzeit of Moses. Because his burial place is not known. The day of his birth, the day of his death. Now, if we proceed to verse number 6. What happened was that after 3 months, Moses was placed as a baby in a basket on the waters of the Nile. Pharaoh's daughter comes along with her maidens. Her maidens provide a cordon around her to guarantee her privacy. She notices the basket. She draws it towards herself. Vatiftach, she opens it. Vatiraynu et hayeled, and she sees the child. Vihinei nahar bocheh, and behold, it's the lad who was crying. Vatachmol alav, she had mercy upon him. Vatomer, and she exclaimed, Miyaldei ha'ibrim zeh, this is one of the Hebrew children. How did she know? So the summer says, simple, she noticed he had been circumcised. But she exclaimed it immediately. She knew that this was a Hebrew child, and it had something to do with his crying. She heard him crying, and she said, from this cry I know that he is a Hebrew. So let me explain. There are two types of crying. Sometimes we cry because of ourselves. I am in pain. I'm experiencing a trauma. Somebody has done something to me. I feel sorry for myself. That's one form of crying. There's a second form of crying. When I see somebody else who is in trouble. And I cry because of that person's pain, because of that person's plight and ordeal. A very young child can only cry in the first way. It's a very selfish form of cry. It's only at a later time, a number of years later, that children start to identify with the suffering of others. Sometimes you can actually see it in quite young children, that power of empathy for those around them. But it doesn't come at a very early age. Now, what happened? You see, in this verse we're saying, We read, but she saw the child, behold, it was that who was crying. Two different descriptive terms used for this little baby. She saw he was a baby, but the cry was the cry of the lad. Meaning Moses was crying not for himself, but he had a sense of empathy. He was in tune with the suffering of his people. And she recognized immediately the hallmark of Jewish children, and she said, Mialdehai brings that. This is something that Jewish people do. They have a natural sense through which they identify with the suffering of others. And so we see, from the very first moment, Moses was there for the sake of other people. I studied for a number of years in Yeshivat Haaretzion in Israel. One of my Rashi Yeshiva was Rav Amital, and when asked to describe the purpose of Jewish learning, the purpose of Torah study, he would always repetitively tell the following Hasidic tale. It's the story of the Alter Rebbe, the founder of Lubavitch Hasidim, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. And he was in a house, family home, in a room studying Torah, and in the room next to him was his grandson, to become the Tzemach Tzedek, Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Lubavitch. This is end of 19th century. And in the room next to him was his child, a baby. So you've got three rooms in a row. The great-grandfather of the baby hears the baby crying, 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 crying. So he walks through the middle room, and he sees his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, who is so immersed in his study, he's oblivious to the cry. The great-grandfather goes over, cuddles the child, pushes him backwards and forwards. Child goes back to sleep, and he's on his way back, and he stops at the desk where his grandson is, and he says to him, Menachem Mendel, if the intensity of your Torah study is such that you cannot hear the cry of a child, your Torah study is flawed. Because the whole purpose of Torah study is to enable us to be in tune with those around us, and to be ready to come to their assistance. Our Torah, through which we connect with God, is the greatest vehicle through which we must be in tune with the people around us. And that is something that baby Moses was acutely aware of. Let me now share with you some thoughts about the role of Miriam, the sister of Moses. What a great girl she was, so mature, to stand at the side. And then afterwards, when Pharaoh's daughter discovered Moses, she was immediately able to come up with a solution to a dilemma. She would get one of the nursing mothers of the Hebrews, the child's mother, that wasn't known to Pharaoh's daughter, to nurse the child and then to bring the child into the palace of Pharaoh. So our commentators point out that at the very beginning of this chapter, there's something strange. You see, Miriam was the oldest. Then there was Aaron, who was 3 years older than Moses. But at the beginning of this chapter, we're told, a man of the tribe of Levi went, he married a woman, also a daughter of Levi, and they had a child who was Moses. But what about the two older ones? And from here, the Midrash tells us that actually, Amram and Jochebed had divorced. And in the first verse of this chapter, the description is of their remarriage. What was the story? When Pharaoh declared that every boy would be thrown into the waters of the Nile, Amram and Jochebed, who deeply loved and cherished each other, decided, how can we stay as a married couple together? If we have a child, there is a 50% chance that this child will be killed. How can we do this to our kid and kin? And the eldest child, Miriam, said to them, after they had separated, Mommy and Daddy, you have to get back together again. They said, we can't. And she said, you have to. Leave it up to God to provide the solution. That you have a responsibility. Because if every set of parents would be just like you, that would be the end of our nation. Go for it. Remarry. Have another child. Take that calculated risk. And may God help us all with regard to the child's future. The parents listened to their daughter Miriam. They remarried. That's the description at the beginning of this chapter. And then Moses was born. God helped that baby to survive and to become the great leader of our people. And I derive from this lesson a very powerful message with regard to community building and enterprises for our nation. when it comes to great ideas and concepts, we can always find reasons or excuses not to do things. One of the prime ones that I find popular in communities is we shouldn't do it because it's never been done before. But we should discard all such thoughts. If there's something we genuinely believe in, and we believe that it's going to be for the good of our community and of mankind, let's not be rash, let's not be reckless. But if we're nearly certain that it should work, let's take that calculated risk and we'll go for it. So many shuls, so many community buildings, so many cultural centers have been established through emulating the vision of Miriam to go for it, even though there are risks and challenges, and to pray that God will help us in all of our pursuits. On Friday night, around the Shabbat table, as we gather there as a family, we sing Eish Chet Chayah. It's a tribute to the proverbial Jewish woman of valor. Marvelous passage from Proverbs chapter 30. Great aspirations for Jewish women to have. I'm not sure if you are aware of the fact that in the Eish Chet Chayah, there is a verse which is dedicated to a non-Jewish lady. And she is held as a role model for all Jewish women to follow. It's in the verse starting with the letter Tet, Tama Kitov Sakra, Lo Yichber, Balayla Neva. Very difficult to translate unless you're aware of the biblical context that is actually in this chapter of the book of Exodus. Tama Kitov Sakra. The reason why she received a reward was Kito, same words that we read here, because of a child who was good, whom she saved. Lo yichber balayla neira, therefore her light was not extinguished in the middle of the night. Pharaoh's daughter was the firstborn of her family. And according to most commentators and understandings of the book of Exodus, the plague of the firstborn affected both women and men who were firstborn. And that is why the Machabe Rabbi Yosef Karin Shulchan Aruch says that when it comes to the fast of the firstborn on the day before Pesach, women in families where they are the firstborn should also fast. According to other traditions, predominantly in the Ashkenazi world, we say only men. And it all depends on whom this plague actually affected. But the tradition predominantly is that it affected women just as it affected men. But one firstborn individual was saved. Pharaoh's daughter. Ta'ama kitov sakra. What was the reason for that reward? It was because she saved the person kitov who was good, Moses. Lo yichber balayla neira. Therefore her light was not extinguished in the middle of the night. She did not die on that night. Isn't it amazing that we hold up an Egyptian princess every Friday night in our homes as a role model for all Jewish women to follow? Why? Because she went out of her way to help somebody, even though he wasn't part of her people. So now we continue reading. Verse 10. So once the child has grown up, and she has been fully nursed, Yocheved brought him into Pharaoh's palace, by Nilal Adain, and he became a stepson of Pharaoh's daughter. But she called Moshmo Moshe. She called his name Moshe, but from her because she said, to me, am I, and she too, because I threw him out of the water. There's a problem with the name Moshe. He should have been called Mashui, meaning he was drawn out. Moshe means he draws out. So basically what she was saying was, Moshe, because I drew you out of the water, your name is going to be Moshe, so that you similarly will have the capacity to draw out of water. And we're going to find this happening later on in this very chapter when Moshe is at the wellside in Midian and he draws water out for the seven daughters of Jethro. We find that there was a problem with the Israelites needed to cross the waters of the Red Sea. Moses drew an entire nation out of the waters of that sea miraculously, thanks to God. And then we find that when the people thirsted for water in the wilderness, Moses drew water out of a rock for them to drink. So here we learn something very special. If you have been the recipient of kindness, you should always give back. That's why, time and time again, the Torah tells us, Vavtem et ager, you, the Jewish people, should love strangers Ki gerimei etim eretz Mitzrayim, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. What good did the Egyptians do for us? But even then, we still should have some element of hakarat of indebtedness to a nation that hosted us, and so too we as a nation should always extend our loving kindness to one and all. That was embodied in that name Moshe. He received kindness through being drawn out of water, so he through his life should draw others out of water. So now we come onto an epic tale. Verse 11. Moses grew up, he was old enough to be an independent person. He was acutely aware of his Hebrew origins, and he went out to seek his brethren. And he saw their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian taskmaster smiting one of his Hebrew brethren. He looked this way and that. When he saw that there was nobody there, he struck the Egyptian, he killed him, and he hid his body in the sand. That is because the taskmaster was essentially threatening the life of this Hebrew. Unstopped, he would have gone on to kill him. Moses then went out on the second day, and there he saw two Hebrews who were fighting each other. So he said to the protagonist, "Lama takir yachal? Why are you smiting your friend, your brother?" On the very first occasion, when Moses goes out to his brethren, he sees a phenomenon which has plagued the Jewish people time and time again throughout our history, and it is plaguing us right now. At a very time when we are threatened from without, from our enemies who seek us harm, within the ranks of the Jewish nation, we are divided. While on one day he sees an Egyptian taskmaster trying to kill a Hebrew, the very next day he sees two Hebrews fighting one another. And it is here that Moses recognized how important Jewish unity would need to be. Later on, in the portion of Ha'azinu, in the song of Moses, when he gives us inspiration during the days just before he's about to pass away, he says, Ya'akov, Hebel, Nachalato, the people of Jacob will have the inheritance of a rope. Why would the Jewish people have the inheritance? The legacy of a rope. Why a rope? So some explain, because when you are measuring borders, as they did in ancient times, the measuring unit was a rope. Let's say a rope would be 10 feet long. So you would see how many ropes you would need to go right around the circumference of a field or a property, etc. So they measure distances in ropes. But there's a better explanation. If you take a little piece of string and you try and break it, you can. But if you take dozens of pieces of string and create out of them a rope, it's simply unbreakable. And therefore Moses, just before he passed away, wanted to send a message to him. One of the greatest messages from his experience as being a leader of our people for over 40 years, Ya'akov Chevel Nachalato, we as a Jewish people need to lead a rope-styled existence, to come together with a sense of unity. Let me share with you my favorite ideas, so some of you might have heard it before, and all of you will no doubt hear it again. It's the origin of the Hebrew word for hand. Hand is yad. So this is not just a cute little idea, it's the real reason. Why is hand called yad? You see, in a hand you have 14 joints. 3 in each finger and 2 in the thumb. Adding up to 14. 14 in Hebrew lettering is yud dalet. And yud dalet spells yad. So that's why hand is yad. When you have two people, and they shake hands or they hold hands, yud dalet spells the word yadid, which means a friend. And Yadid is 14 and 14, totaling 28. And 28 in Hebrew lettering is Kafchet, which spells Koach, which is strength. The greatest source of the Koach, of the strength of the Jewish people, is Yedidut. It is friendship. It is peace. It is unity within our ranks. And that is something that Moses saw the necessity for at the very beginning of his career. Now, Moses challenges the Hebrews, the protagonist And what reply does he get in verse 14? By Yomer, he's from Talayim, son of Shafei Talayim. The fellow says to Moses, who appointed you to be a judge and a ruler over us? Do you intend to kill me in the same way as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?
Moses was filled with fear and dread, and he said, the matter is now out. And the question we must ask is,
how is it possible to become common knowledge? On the day before, by Yifel Kor Bachor, he turned this way and that. By Yarki Eif, he saw there was no person. And on the next day, it's common knowledge. Ah, so you say there was a person. There was the Hebrew that the taskmaster was hitting. Now that Hebrew would not have revealed these details to anybody because he wouldn't wish any harm to fall on Moses, and he himself would be a marked man. So there is only one way to explain it. Do the antics of the fathers we are taught, b'makom she'ein ish, ishtadel leyot ish. In a place where there is no man, strive to be a man. Moses came into a slave yard. There were hundreds of Hebrews there. And in the middle of this place, he saw an Egyptian taskmaster beating the daylight out of a Hebrew. And this was commonplace. This would happen day after day. Nobody was willing to come to the assistance of the victim. B'makom she'ein ish, this was a place where there was no person willing to stand up and fight for justice and to defend an innocent person. Moses strove to become that man. And that's why there were many witnesses. And that's why the matter was known the following day. Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. And the Torah tells us, Al ta'amot al dam re'acha, don't stand idly by the blood of your fellow. If we see injustice, if we witness something that is wrong, we must come forward to do something about it. So let's go on now to verse 15. If ever there was a verse in the Torah which can be described as a fast-forward verse, this is it. Pharaoh heard all about this matter. And he was determined as a result to take Moses' life. Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh. And he dwelt in the land of Midian. And he sat by the wellside. So one single verse transports us from a scene in a slave yard in Egypt through to a wellside in the land of Midian, wanting us to link up two episodes. And what is the next story? Here it is. Verse 16. The priest of Midian, Jethro, had seven daughters. And they came in order to draw water for the flock of their father. And the Midianite men, shepherds, came along and they shoved them away. And Moses, who was there, seeing this injustice, there was no first come, first served being respected here, seeing what was happening to the seven daughters of Jethro, he arose. And he personally watered their flock. So they came to Reuel. Reuel is another name for Jethro. And he said to them, why are you home so early today? And they said, there's a new man in town. He's Egyptian, obviously, from his attire. And he saved us from the shepherds. He drew water for us. And he watered the flocks. Notice, by the way, this is obviously a daily phenomenon. Their father, Jethro, allowed this to happen. Mm-hmm. Within the culture of that civilization, it was commonplace for women's rights to be denied. And so, okay, they're pushed aside, they come home late, so be it. That's how Jethro views things, but not Moses. By Yomer El Benotar. And then having heard why they came home early that day, Jethro says to his children, the Ayor, and where is he? Why did you leave him behind? Kirev of the Ochalach, come, let him break bread with us. This is the obvious question that any parent of seven unmarried daughters would ask. The new man in town, here I go, and where is he? Give him love, bring him to the home. Let him have a meal with us.
Vayoel Moshe el Asheret et Aviv. Moses came. He didn't only come for the meal. He welcomed the man. But he came to Korah, he told him Moshe. And Jethro gave to Korah, his daughter, to Moshe to become a wife. She gave birth to a son, and so on. There are three models of shidduchim in the Torah. Three models that are presented to us as to how a man and a woman might meet together in order to establish a home together. This is the third one. So let's go through the three. The first is the passage in Parshat Chayei Sarah where Eliezer is sent by his master Abraham to Mesopotamia to find a wife for Isaac. Isaac himself is not involved. There's a representative, a shadchan, an Eliezer the shadchan. He's got a whole list of criteria with boxes to tick. And isn't it impressive that the prime box to tick is one of chesed, of loving kindness? If a lady will come and voluntarily she will offer to give water to the strange Eliezer and also to his camels, that's a sign that she is the right person to be the next mother of the people of Israel, an appropriate wife for Isaac. And Rebecca, actually, satisfied all of those requirements. She is brought back on a camel. We're told how Isaac went out to daven, to pray in the afternoon. That's the origin of the mincha, afternoon prayer. And she's coming towards him, and as she comes close enough to look at him, the Torah tells us, "Vatipol me'ala gamal," she fell off the camel. So there are two ways of explaining it. One is to say there was that aura of kedusha, of holiness surrounding Isaac. Wow, it was just so overpowering. She had gone from the home of idolatry, and it was just too much for her. The other was she saw how handsome he was. Wow, can you imagine what she was thinking of throughout that journey? Who is the fellow I'm going to marry? And Vatipol me'ala gamal, she fell off the camel. That's the origin of the term, she fell for him. And so, through the shidduch, we're told he married her and he loved her in that order. And it all went well afterwards. That's the first model. The second model comes one generation later. Jacob comes along to the well in Mesopotamia. By the way, you see a lot of things happen in wells. The best way I could describe a well in modern terms is the ancient well is our Brent Cross. Or other shopping malls. It's a place from where you go to in order to get everything you need during the day, and it's a place where you socialize, especially if you're a shepherd and all day long you sit by yourself and the animals. This is your chance to connect with people. So Jacob comes along to the well side. He meets Rachel. There's no shadchan, there's nobody else involved. It's love at first sight for both of them. Within 1 month, they've decided they want to get married, and he's willing to work for 7 years for her. That's the second model. Now we have the third model, somewhere in between the two. The third model is, I describe the third model with one word, nudging. So you've got a parent, unmarried daughters, new man in town, you have to bring him home. He comes home, no, what do you think, etc. And eventually, when they do get married, he claims the credit. He gave Sipporah's daughter to Moses as a wife. And we see it also worked. So, therefore, there is no one single way. The most important thing is that, please God, people should find the appropriate person with whom to get married. There's that story of a fellow who didn't have much luck. He would leave girl after girl, and once the relationship would become quite serious, he'd bring her home for a Friday night supper, and then his mother wouldn't like her, and that would be the end of it. So he was telling one of his friends about this, and his friend said, "I've got a suggestion for you. Why don't you find somebody who's just like your mother? And you'll see, your mother she will like her." He thought that was a good idea. So sometime after, he met a lady. She had the same kind of taste as his mother, the same views, the same attitudes, the same mindset, spoke a bit like his mother, looked a bit like his mother. The time was ready for the Friday night meal. Friend saw him after that weekend. "No, how did it go?" He says, "It's all off." Friend said, "What do you mean? Didn't your mother like her?"
He says, my mother loved her. So he says, so what's the problem? He says, my father didn't like her. You know, the Bible is a very romantic book. All these details about the shidduch for Isaac and how she met and felt and married her and he loved her and Jacob loved at first sight. But just to read the details of what happened with regard to Moses, we're told by Yitele Tzipora told Moshe, Jethro gave Tzipora, his daughter to Moses to be a wife, but Tele Bay, and she gave birth to a son, that's it! No romance, no feeling, no nothing. How can you explain it? And I believe that there is only one explanation. It's another reason why Moses was to become our great leader. This wasn't a regular time. This is a time when his people were being oppressed, when there was serious persecution, when the very survival of the Hebrew nation was in doubt. This is a time when he was totally in tune with what was happening to his nation, and consequently his personal life was not something to sing about, to provide details about. There is only one main storyline at this time, and it's the future prospects for the Jewish people to live. What happens to me in my personal capacity, my romantic life, my this or that, that's not of importance at a time such as this. Moses had his priorities right. Of course, he was a good boyfriend and husband and family man and so on. But ultimately, he was dedicated wholeheartedly to the future of his people. Now, we find in respect of a further contrast that there is a contrast between Noah and Moses. You see, Noah at the beginning of Parshat Noach is described as Ish Tzadik, a righteous man. Moses, as we saw here, is introduced to us as Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man. After the flood, when Noah became drunk, he's described as Ish Hadamah, a man of the ground. In the last days of his life in the parish of the Zotah Bracha, Moses is described as Ish Ha'elokim, man of God. So Noah went from righteous man of the ground. Moses went from Egyptian man to man of God. And I think that that's the story about all of us. Where are we taking our personal lives? We've only got one chance to live in this world. Are we going to be like a Noah who starts out with great prospects, being good and righteous and upright, and eventually being just a person who lusts for material gain as a man of the ground? Or will we be like Moses, starting out like a man who comes from just a man and a woman, being brought up in Egypt, eventually to become the greatest man of God? It's in our hands to determine what our future will be. I'd like to conclude my shiur by focusing on what for me is the most significant message of the chapter that we're learning together. It's that fast forward verse. It's the way in which the Torah links up those two episodes. Moses coming to the rescue of the poor, victimized Hebrew in an Egyptian slave yard. And then Moses coming to the aid of the seven daughters of Jethro in Midian. The two are connected in order to teach us an all-important lesson. As Jews in the first instance, we must be totally devoted to our fellow Jews, mindful of the importance of unity, as we explained, to be there for one Lord. And at the same time as Jews, we must be committed to every single human being created in the image of God. This is why this passage appears before the episode of the burning bush and Moses' appointment as our leader, to show that we have to have universalistic ideals, that we are here as a people in order to be an oral like Oyim, a light unto the nations, and not to simply exist in a self-imposed ghetto away from the other peoples of the world. And we should take a leaf out of the book of Moses himself, who was committed equally to the plight of his fellow Hebrews, and also to the plight of people he had never met in his life before, women who at that time in Midian were not highly regarded, he was there to come up and to do something brave on their behalf.
In the parasha of Shmini, we're given the laws of Kashrut. All the do's and the don'ts with regard to food. And when it comes to animals, there are two signs for kosher animals. Kosher animals have cloven hooves and they chew the cud. One is an external sign, the other is an internal sign. With regard to fish, there are also two signs. Fins and scales, both external. And with regard to birds, there are no signs. Rather, we have a list of all of the trait birds, the birds that we may not eat. And on that list, there is a bird called Hachasida. The Chasida is a stork. What an amazing name to have. The Chasida, the pious one, what an incredible tribute it is to that creature, to the stork. And indeed, the Ramban explains, the stork is a very merciful creature engaging in acts of loving kindness towards other birds and creatures. So the Pirushei HaRim asks the following question. If you have a look at that list of trade birds, all of them actually are birds of prey. So what is the Chasida, the stork, doing in that list? If it's Chasida, a pious one, there for the sake of others, and explains the Pirushei HaRim that the stork is only kind to birds of its feather. However, when it comes to other birds and other creatures, it acts with disdain and with cruelty. Consequently, it is a chasida, it is pious, but that way of life is traitor. When we exist only for ourselves, when our compassion reaches out only to those who are part of our own communities, when we disregard others who are members of other communities, when we build walls around us and do not reach out to all of God's creatures, it might be a pious way of life, but it's a trait way of life. And that is the lesson that we learn from Moses. As he went out to experience life in the world around him, to become our greatest leader. Equally, he gave up himself to his own and to all others, there to be comforted, there to be a courageous individual, there to show that he was equally a man of his people and a responsible human being on earth. Let us, therefore, learn from Moses that whoever we are, we can have an incredible future. It doesn't depend on our yiftus, it depends on what we will strive to achieve and what we will actually accomplish. And let us, through the rest of the days that we're blessed with on earth, prove that we're here for a great purpose and we can do incredible things. From Moses we learn the importance of Jewish unity. It's bad enough that there are others who seek our harm. We need to concentrate seriously on binding the Jewish people rope-like together. And from Moses we learn of our responsibility to reach out to every single Jewish person with love and compassion, to be there for one and all, and at the same time to engage in tikkun olam, to reach out to all of mankind, so that indeed we as a Jewish nation will be a light unto all peoples, and we will make this world into a better place. Amen. Amen.